Hello there, and welcome to Marketing Room 101, the podcast where I invite marketers to join me for a good old rant, and I give them the chance to banish one thing from the industry forever. I'm your host, Ben Norman, Strategy Director at Principles, the agency that builds unforgettable brands, and in this episode, I'm joined by Robert Solomon, a person I've wanted to speak to for a long time, because his book, The Art of Client Service, had a massive impact on my career. Robert has over four decades client service experience in the marketing world, and he's garnered a reputation as the world's leading authority on making better advertising by building stronger relationships with clients. In this episode, we unpick the messy world of modern marketing, what place client service has within it, and why some agencies are potentially walking with their eyes closed off a cliff by turning away from it. So here is my conversation with Robert Solomon. Robert, welcome to Marketing Room 101.
Thank you, Ben. Pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. So, Robert, we are in Marketing Room 101 now. Can you please set the scene for our listeners? Can you just describe what it's like in here inside Marketing Room 101?
Okay, Ben, I had a dream. So I want you to imagine a large windowless room. It's got fluorescent lighting. It's got linoleum floor. It's completely windowless. There's a big glass panel up front. And on one side of that panel is a ticket machine. So people walk in, they take a ticket, they take a seat on one of the plastic chairs, and they're waiting for their number to be called by the person behind the window. So the room's full. There are many people there. There's a line waiting out the door. The line goes on forever. Now, I've taken a peek out the door, and it's like it's surreal because the line goes on forever. And everyone in that room and out that door is clutching a pink slip of paper. So where are we? We're in an unemployment office. And those pink slips, I don't know if you know what they mean in your part of the world, but in the United States, a pink slip is a termination notice. So people are there to pick up their unemployment checks. Some are young, but a lot of them are older, you know, middle-aged and beyond. Some of the faces are really sad. Some are really angry. A few are desperate. So I talked to a few of them. And to a person, all of them worked in advertising account management. And now they're all out of a job. And that's the room I've walked into. I know you said you wanted me to tell you something that was how the room is, but that's the room I imagine.
It's a sad room. It's a sad room. It's partially linked to the reason I discovered you in the first place, which I suppose I will get onto. But when I first read your book, when I was trying to seek more insight around the professionality of what I did for a living at that point. But I suppose before we get onto that, just to recap, essentially in the UK, we would call this the job centre, and the pink slips, the notice of termination in the UK, we'd call that a P45. So that means we've got these people that are in the job centre and it's a dark, dimly lit room with no windows. And that's where we're trapped amongst lots of account management people who no longer have their job.
That's correct. You know, I read a piece in the advertising trades, you know, and in Adweek, they actually said that global agency McCann Worldwide, is doing away with account management. And this isn't the first time I've heard about this. People have become so disillusioned with the way that account management operates that McCann is taking the extreme step of eliminating that position. They're going to go to project management and have some senior strategic leadership. Account management, as I certainly know it, will be gone. And that's a pretty frightening prospect to me, because I think about all the damage that will come from this, the collateral damage that will come from this. And I think of all the people that will get hurt. I think clients will be hurt the most. So, you know, when I described that room to you and it seemed a little bit extreme, I actually think there's some truth to it. There's a whole cohort of account people who are actually losing their positions.
So I think hopefully we can get to what the alternative might be to this and the alternative reality. Before we do, and before we really get stuck into that as an issue, Robert, the more astute listeners of this podcast might have noticed by now that I essentially started this podcast as a ruse to get the opportunity to meet and chat to people who've written my favourite books or people that I find particularly interesting in the industry. But you're quite unique within that group, because for all the books there are about how to make great advertising, how to be a better marketer, all these other subjects, there are very, very few books about the art of client service, which for me was like when I was an account handler, which was the first sort of 10 years of my career, I found it quite frustrating. And I actually went in search for a book when I started to feel like there was this almost a bit of a deprofessionalization of client service. It sort of felt like maybe that was happening rather than this extremely valuable, important, strategic profession. It kind of seen in the industry or in the agency in particular, just being this project management role, order taking, process, billing, just doing the sweeping up while everybody else makes the mess almost. So when I did discover The Art of Client Service, your book, I sort of finally felt like there was some validation for me for what I thought client service was meant to be. And also this very rare guide on how to do it well. Can you just briefly explain what you think the purpose of the book is? And I'm sort of curious, was there a trigger that made you first decide to put pen to paper and write that book?
The reason I did it is because I, like you, Ben, went looking for a book to train my own people. I was running a big account group at Amirati Imperius. I said, you know, I need something that will help me a little bit, sort of better define and codify what my folks are supposed to be doing. Can I find something that would actually do that? I went looking, you know, and of course, at that point, Amazon existed. You could go out to Amazon. You could do a search. Google existed. You could do some of that there. So I went looking for a book, couldn't find one. And so I said, well, there are some pretty talented account handlers who have not written this book. I don't know why they haven't written this book, but since there isn't any kind of a book that really addresses advertising account management, not consulting account management, not sales, but advertising account management, I'm going to write that book. So I did. It was a terrible book, but I wrote it. And and it's evolved, you know, through, it was a book called Brain Surgery for Suits. I rather forget that book. I wrote it a long time ago. And then it morphed into The Art of Client Service, the first edition, then a second and a third edition. And over time, I evolved it and it got slightly better. So the reason I did it is because I realized there wasn't anything. And I, like you, were sort of challenged by this notion that advertising account management is ephemeral and hard to describe. Let's say your mom, you're at lunch with your mom or your dad. They say, okay, what do you do? What do you do, Ben? And you could say, well, I'm a copywriter. And they sort of understand, okay, he writes stuff. Or I'm an art director. Oh, you design stuff. Or I'm a media person. Oh, you probably talk to the TV stations. You can sort of figure out if you work in art or copy or media, even if you're a planner, you can figure it out. If you're in production, you can sort of define it. Then when you say, well, what do you do for account management? And you're at a loss. You don't even know how to describe it. And I realize, you know, there's a tradecraft to account management, but no one has even described it. So let me try to do that. And that's what I did. I tried to describe what an account person needs to do well. And the reason you want it to do well is because you wanted to build a meaningful relationship with your clients. And the reason you wanted to build a meaningful relationship for your clients is because that is the best way to get a client to grow. And that is the best way to preclude a client from saying goodbye to you.
Perfect. I think that's a great summary. What I won't do is pick your brains to the nth degree about the book here. I will just say, if you work in client service, read the latest edition of The Art of Client Service. And I suppose the only other thing I will ask before we get into banishing something, as a client service person, one of the things that you do and one of the things that's really important is to try and imagine the world through your client's eyes and take a step back and be empathetic in that meaningful way. So what do you think great client service looks like through the eyes of a client? And how do you think they could spot good client service versus bad client service?
You know, that's a great question, Ben. And it's a relatively simple question to formulate and not such a simple answer to respond with. But I have worked pretty hard to sort of distill what clients are expecting from their advertising people down into like five things. And you'll be surprised. The five things are, a couple of them are incredibly simple and self-evident. And actually, it sort of gets informed in a second book I wrote, which is called Why Client Service is an Art, you know, because it's like the companion to The Art of Client Service, which, by the way, just a digression, should have been called The Science of Client Service, because it's a lot of how-to. It's a lot of how do you brief colleague? How do you write a conference report? How do you do a proposal? How do you do a scope of work? How do you do a creative brief? It's a book of how-to. Well, this, the second book I'm writing, is much more about the artistry of this. And I've distilled it down to five things. And one of the five things is the most simple thing, is you just show up for your clients. To the extent that you can be face-to-face and in-person with your clients, it really makes sense. The second thing is follow-up. You know, the thing that clients have told me for years is, you know, I feel like I'm perpetually being ghosted by my agency people. I put out a question. Maybe it's by email. Maybe I call and leave a message. Maybe I text them, whatever, however I do it. And I don't get an answer. I go into a giant black hole of non-response. So just following up is the second thing. The third thing is, this is just shorthand, but I call it speak up. And it's all about communicating with clarity and concision and conviction. That's incredibly important. And then the fourth thing I have is actually make it up, which is all about ideas. Because clients have said to me, you know, my people are pretty good at responding to me, but what I don't get for them is any thinking. No one ever comes to me and says, you know, we've taken a look at the business, we've taken a look at your competitors, we're looking at the advertising, and we see an opportunity here. So the land of make it up is just the world of being more creative when it comes to formulating ideas that either capitalize on opportunities or solve problems. And the last one is, just for lack of a better term, I call it stand up, which is in the moment being really, really good when it matters. And this is best illustrated by a story, which I tell in the book, but we'll save that for another day. So it sort of goes to, like, show up, follow up, speak up, make it up, and stand up are the five things that I think clients are looking for from their agencies. And are they getting it? Well, you know, I do this little chart. I draw this little chart. It's got a vertical axis, a horizontal axis, and I draw a line in the middle. On one side of the axis I have is the stuff you know, ranging from nothing to everything, and the stuff you do, it's on the horizontal axis, from the stuff you do from nothing to everything. And I draw a line in the middle. I said, all of you do some of the stuff you know some of the time, and I need to get you, and I draw the line up to the far right-hand corner, and I say, you need to get to the stage where you do all the stuff you know all the time. And that's where I think clients are lamenting what happens with their agency people. Agency people don't consistently do all the things they need to do. And the things they need to do are not enormously difficult to master.
I think that's a brilliant, I don't like the word framework, but I would say those five things, if you were to try and imagine, if you are a client, think about your agency. Are they doing those five things? If you are an agency, can you say 100% that in your role, your client is seeing that you turn up, you follow up, you speak up, you make it up, you stand up? Well, the one that really landed with me there was follow up. So often I've seen within teams, within agencies I've worked in, where a client request comes in, and that request is actioned immediately. But this is where it comes down to little things sometimes, isn't it? Where they've done the work, they've taken that request, they've spoken to the studio team, they've planned in to come up with a solution, they've had that discussion. Behind the scenes, it's all happened. But that client doesn't know you've done anything with it. That client sat there thinking, the agency are ignoring me. I don't know if my problem's been solved. I don't know when I'm going to receive that back. 3 days later, the problem comes back to them solved. But in the meantime, they've spent 3 days thinking, why am I being ghosted?
Amen. I had a colleague I worked with, a guy named Tom Nelson, a very, very good creative director at Amirati. And Tom had a very, very strong point that he's a creative guy. He made the clients. He said, early and often. And he would say to all of us, he would say, look, I don't want to wait until we've solved the problem. I want to bring the client in while I'm trying to solve the problem. And I want to share with them, you know, well, it used to be in the old days, we'd call them tissues. You know, we would do a lot of rough sketching out of things. And we'd bring in a lot of ideas and we'd throw them up on the wall and we would get reactions. And there were a couple reasons why you would do this, Ben, and it's to your point. First of all, they would see you at work and they would see the volume of thinking displayed, some of it good, some of it bad, some of it promising, some of it not. They would see and they'd say, okay, these guys have been at this. They've obviously been thinking about this problem a lot of different ways. They would interact with you. They'd have a lot of questions, concerns, opinions, and thoughts. And over this time, whether you're doing it in the client's office or in the agency's office, what happens here is clients take ownership of the work. They begin to make it theirs. This is a process that almost always leads to work that succeeds in the marketplace because I like to say my clients have forgotten more than I will ever know about their business. Now, I will say, you will never know as much about advertising as I do, but I will never know as much about your business or your product or your service. It comes from a place of respect. And so I want to bring them in because I want to respect their opinions. I want to listen to them. So to Tom's point, early and often makes a ton of sense.
I agree with everything you've just said. And I think it just goes to show the value of bringing the client on board, right? The client is part of this journey. We are not making a sandwich. We're not taking an order and going away. And then there you go. There's your sandwich. It's bigger than that. It's more nuanced. And ultimately, the client decides whether they sign it off or not. If you give me a sandwich and I've paid you the money for the sandwich, largely the transaction is complete. But if I have to inspect that and inspect every aspect of it and then decide whether or not I want to buy it or whether I want to go back and amend it, then you're better off involving me in the conversation early.
I think, Ben, you're actually touching on the difference between sales and client service. Sales is transactional. You walk in, you buy a thing or a service, you pay, and you're gone. What we do in client service is relational. It's about interacting. It's about exchanging views. It's about having opinions. It's about working together to make it better. So frankly, if you're going to be successful at this, it has to be based on a relationship. You know, if I think about really great work that's gotten done by legendary agencies, you know, take 1984, you know, iconic piece of advertising that changed the face of advertising. Do you know that that advertising was turned down by the board of directors at Apple Computer? It was basically Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak brought it into the board. The board said, no, we hate this advertising. And then there's a guy named Fred Goldberg who was running TBWA Chiat/Day at the time. He takes it and he gets it tested. He goes and does research. It does terrible in research. But Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak had such a deep relationship with Jay Chiat, Lee Clow, Steve Hayden, and a host of other people. The relationship was strong. Mm. They believed in the advertising. They literally said to the board, if you won't pay to run this, because this was going to run on the Super Bowl, we will pay for it out of our own pockets. We're running this advertising. They believed in it. The reason they believed in it was all based on the relationship. And what happened? They ran the ad and it changed advertising history. That is a great example of relationships underpinning a piece of brilliant work.
So, Robert, your time has come to banish something from the marketing industry. Can you tell me, please, what is it that you would like to banish?
Well, I've got to tell you that if I have one thing to banish, I want to banish all the people who want to banish account management from advertising and marketing. I want to banish those people.
I love that. Banish the banishers.
Yes, basically banish the banishers.
So you touched on this at the start of the recording, really, with a quite frightening statement about McCann looking to essentially remove client service from their processes. What do you think we'd be left with?
Well, I'll tell you how McCann answers the question, and then maybe you and I can talk about it a little. McCann will say, look, we're going to do away with account management because we've got project management, we'll have senior people, and that's what's going to happen here. We're going to handle it this way. What a digressor saying, because I think this reminds me of a client I had. I had Levi Strauss as a client, which you might be familiar with because BBH did some legendary advertising for Levi Strauss quite a few years ago. Sir John Hegarty led a group that did some pretty amazing advertising for Levi's. And if you think about Levi's, Levi's was synonymous with blue jeans. You didn't go say, I want to go wear a pair of blue jeans. You went and said, I want to wear a pair of Levi's. Just the way you'd say, oh, I want to Xerox something rather than copy it. The word had become so synonymous with the brand, it literally had co-opted it. So Levi's was basically synonymous with blue jeans. But over time, what happened to Levi's was that at the low end, they got undercut on price. So you had a lot of mass merchandisers said, well, we can't compete with them as a brand, but we can make a cheaper version of blue jean. So they would undercut them on price and they'd wind up in all the mass marketers. They'd wind up in Walmart, Kohl's, all these big mass merchandisers. And then at the high end, you had a lot of people who said, well, we're not going to compete with Levi's, but we can make a better blue jean at a higher premium price. So Levi's found themselves squeezed. And over time, their market shrunk to the point where now Levi's is basically an afterthought in the category. Well, that's how I think about account management. For years, you know, account managers were really the leaders in helping clients solve problems, capitalize on opportunities, formulate strategy. But then someone named Jane Newman from your part of the world came to TBW Shia Day, invented planning in the United States. Planners actually pretty much over time took over the responsibility for being the voice of the consumer with the agency. So account people were sort of no longer at that end, the planning end, handling that. And then in the early days of advertising, there was this group called traffic, which literally was the function of sort of circulating the work through the halls of the agency. Well, traffic grew to become more responsible and began to take on greater project tasks. Yeah. And they sort of grew into project management. So at the high end, you had planning sort of taking over the responsibilities for strategic thinking. You had project management taking over responsibilities for execution, and account management said, well, what's my role? They didn't know how they could add value. You know, I had a client call me one day. I was doing some workshops for him. He was running a big global healthcare agency. And he said, Robert, my people have forgotten how to be account people. They've become glorified appointment takers. So someone calls up with a problem. They don't solve it. They don't solve it. They go to the specialist. They go to the planner. They go to the creatives. They go to the media people. If they go to the project management people, they don't solve anything for themselves. Their skills have atrophied. They've got all these vestigial organs. And so they no longer add value to the client in a way that the client can see. So the client is saying, well, why am I paying for these people? You know, I can just work with the specialists directly. I can work with project management. I can work with planning. I can work with all these people. And so clients are becoming account people. They're co-opting this role. And I think that is actually quite dangerous. And so McCann, go back to McCann, McCann's doing away with this function, and they're not alone. Other agencies are thinking in the same way. You know, obviously, the unemployment office is filled with account people looking for jobs. They will look for jobs on the client side, or they look for jobs outside of advertising, which is a loss to advertising. But the people who I think will suffer the most are the people in the creative department, who no longer will have account people as the voice of authority, who knows everything about that client, who has all the institutional history about that client, who is kind of the cultural carrier for the organization, the agency. They will no longer have that person to rely on. Planning people will no longer have that as a colleague, and they'll suffer a bit for that. But the people who are really going to suffer, Ben, are the clients. I think the clients are going to find out pretty quickly that not having that single point of contact through account management is going to make enormous inefficiency for them.
It's quite an interesting challenge, isn't it? Because we think what's left and what is left is an industry or a relationship that is very transactional. And the second you get to a relationship that is transactional, we know that that's never for the benefit of either party. And obviously, there are probably 1,000 reasons that have led us to where we are now. But I guess what I'd say is, if we're looking at trying to banish the death of client service or banish the people that want to banish client service, what would you say to account managers right now, that those account managers who really believe in what they do and believe that they want to keep their jobs, what would you say that they should do and they should start doing to push against that?
That's a great question, because it's one thing to tell you, I think this is what we need to eliminate. You are totally right to say, well, how are we going to fix the problem? Okay, Solomon, you brought me the problem. Now bring me the solution. I think the solution is we need to reestablish account people as the advertising agency's voice of authority. They have to become the voice of the authority. If you think about planning as sort of like the voice of the consumer, and you think about the creative people as kind of the voice of the agency because they're creating the product, I think you need to have account people established as the voice of authority. They have to be the go-to resource for all things client-centric. So if someone has a question about the clients or the competitors, the first people they go to are the account people. What do you think about this? This person has studied the client competition landscape really, really well, understands it well, understands the client's products and services They understand everything about organization, pricing, distribution, you know, strengths, weakness, opportunities, threats, all that stuff. And then separately from that, they understand the people on the client side. They understand them as individuals, their hopes, fears, and dreams. What do they want to accomplish? What are they afraid of? What keeps them awake at night? What do they like? What do they dislike? They become, when you have an idea, you're a creative guy, you have the kernel of an idea, the first people you should go to, maybe you go to a creative colleague, I totally understand that, but at some point you need to do a reality check with your account people. Your account people are so deeply respected for their opinions and so good at guiding you and preempting you from things that maybe don't work and maybe steering you in a way that might work better. I think that they become an incredibly trusted resource internally. And of course, in turn, because they're so intimately aware of what's going on at the client, clients will progressively turn to them for counsel when they need it. You know, years ago when I had American Express as a client, we were up in Boston. I was at Digitas. I used to go to New York 3 days a week. I'd walk the halls back when security was lax and you could get into the building. So I would walk the halls all the time. And what would happen over time? I'd run this account for so many years. I'd built so many relationships with so many people that when the American Express people were looking for a new candidate, they wouldn't go to their colleagues. They'd come to me. They'd say, Robert, who do you think is really good? Who do you think we can poach? The fact is, they so respected my opinion, they would turn to me for help. That was the degree of building a relationship with the clients that they depended and trusted on me to provide that source of continuity. And that's the kind of thing I think advertising people need to strive for, to be so important to the client that the client thinks, well, I don't know how I'm going to do this without Jane or Joe, who's the person I speak to every day about every issue and problem I have.
Interestingly, a previous guest on the podcast, a chap called Kev Chesters, I've heard him say that the best agencies he ever worked at weren't better because they had a better creative team. All the creative teams were great. They were better because they had a better client service team. There's an aspect of being completely indispensable for the clients, but there's also being completely vital internally, isn't there? Making those creative teams, making the planners, making the producers, buying them more time to work on this brief, buy them an extra evening to work, to get the head around a brief. Just being that ally internally. If you can make sure that your internal teams are desperate to work with you and your clients are desperate for you to be on their team, then if you're doing that as an individual and that's what you're bringing, McCann aren't going to be getting rid of you. Other agencies aren't going to be getting rid of you.
Exactly. I mean, McCann sort of views these people as sort of useless to them now. They've lost their value. But this didn't happen overnight. This happened over years, this decline in skill. And what's happened is, I've said this to you before, you know, clients have gotten way smarter. And then agency people have gotten a whole lot less smart, especially account people. And they become, instead of asking their agency people to do something, they're dictating. I'm going to tell you what I need to have done, because they don't see in their account people the skill, the experience, the knowledge, the wisdom, all of those things. And they say, well, I'm going to have to do this myself or do it with my colleagues. I'm not going to do it with them. Now, how do we make them better? Well, it used to be you went to an agency like Ogilvy and you're a young account person. You did a rotation the way, let's say you're in medical school, you know, and you want to become a general practitioner. You don't want to be a specialist. You don't want to be a neuroscientist. You would do a rotation and you would spend time in each of the disciplines and you would get a modicum of knowledge of each so you could look at your patient holistically. Well, that's what we have to do with account people. They have to have sufficient knowledge in the creative process, the production process, the media process, to be able to look at the client holistically. And that's where we add value. We are general practitioners. And I think there's some lesson here. So if you want to get McCann to reverse its decision, you have to become a general practitioner. Now, this isn't easy. This is really hard. It used to be easy when, you know, we had, you know, three broadcast networks in the United States and you had the BBC in the UK. It's gotten a lot harder now. The channels have all proliferated. The markets have fragmented, but it doesn't absolve you from the responsibility to do this. It's just gotten a whole lot more challenging.
think the idea of client service people thinking, well, I'm not creative, I'm not strategic, I'm not a media expert. No, you are all of those things. You're the only person who has to do all of those things. Correct. And that's a really hard job.
Yes.
I'm fully convinced that I would like to banish the people who want to banish client service. What we'll do is we'll take that and we'll lock that in here in Marketing Room 101. Now, before you go, is there anything else that you would like to bring back into the marketing world?
Well, there are two things I'd like to restore. You said one, but they're related, Ben. You could tell me I'm wrong and I'll just eliminate one. But the thing I would like to restore is trust. And the second thing, and it's closely associated, I'd like to restore wisdom.
Okay, so let's break them down because, yeah, in many ways, it sounds like trust could be a symptom of wisdom. But why would you like to return trust and wisdom?
Well, I think what's happened, I can't entirely speak for what's happening in the UK, but I can speak for what's happened here. Trust has eroded so substantially here in the United States. Clients are perpetually dissatisfied with their agency partners. There are things that they find enormously frustrating about working with them, which explains why so many accounts go into review and the shelf life for client agency loyalty has gotten so much shorter. Clients no longer trust their advertising agencies. Within agencies, creative people, planning people, production people no longer trust their account people. I would like to see trust restored. And I'm going to anticipate your question. And one of the ways you do that is to re-inject wisdom into the process. I think one of the sad casualties in advertising here in this country has been that we've eliminated so many senior people in account management and client service, and we have put a progressively greater level and load of responsibility on junior people who are less well-equipped. There is not enough wisdom in an agency anymore. I'm not saying they're not smart. They are smart, but they don't have the experience. They haven't made the mistakes. They haven't worked with multiple clients. They haven't been exposed to every problem, situation, solution. So I think the restoration of people who are a little more senior, a little more knowledgeable, you know, the people who I've made this reference earlier, who are culture carriers for both their agencies and their clients. Because if there is a greater degree of wisdom here, there is also a greater opportunity to build trust.
Yeah, and I think it's quite interesting that what you've chosen to bring back in trust and wisdom is a symptom of the same problem potentially as the decline of client service, which is so much value has been eroded in the industry over the past 20 or so years that we're making decisions, crazy decisions like not seeing the value in client service in these larger network agencies. But then equally, it's that juniorization of talent. We've removed roles, but we're also removing the senior people in certain roles, aren't we? And put more and more pressure on junior people. So like you say, you end up in a situation where we have fewer people who tend to be less senior. So you could be dealing with an agency of 500 people, but there are only a few that have got the knowledge needed to actually do the job.
Exactly. And that's the problem because, you know, in a day-to-day setting where a client's meeting with an agency person and the agency person is fresh out of school and super smart, super energetic, but doesn't have the experience to say, what if, or how about, or maybe there's another way. So they tend to become kind of glorified order takers. And clients are saying, well, I'm not getting any value from my agency. I'll tell them what to do. So that is kind of what I'd love to see wisdom restored. But to your point, Ben, because procurement has been ruthless and cost cutting is preeminent, we're in a terrible doom loop with the big shops. So the only hope for us is with the smaller entrepreneurial shops, the ones that are not owned by holding companies in the future.
I just happen to know one, actually.
And who might that be, Ben?
Yes, of course.
I mean, Principles is certainly one of those. And I've worked with a lot of independent entrepreneurial agencies who are not encumbered by shareholder price. And
I think it does make a difference. Yeah. I think the industry is moving very rapidly and therefore exposing some of those things. So I will take from you the people who want to banish client service. I'm going to keep them here in Marketing Room 101. I have accepted your pitch to return to you trust and wisdom because they're related. Both do go hand in hand. So you can take them back to the industry. Now, before you go, every week my brother sends me a question to ask of my guest. Now, my brother doesn't work in the industry and he comes up with a question for my guest. And this week he wanted to ask you, Robert, you're obviously a client services expert, but as someone living in the US, I want to ask you about customer service and specifically the culture of tipping in the US, because we Brits are notoriously stingy. So if I were to go on holiday in the US, should I tip anything in the following scenarios? And if so, how much? I'll ask you quick fire on these scenarios. So when the bellboy or girl brings your bags to the hotel room.
Yes. Dollar okay. a bag.
Dollar a bag.
Dollar a bag. Now, I don't know how it translates into euros or pounds, but a dollar a bag in US.
That's right. So what about if you're having a coffee in a coffee shop?
A dollar. There's a tip jar usually there. I often do the transactions by cash through credit card, but then I usually have a little bit of cash with me. I put a dollar in, but if you don't have a dollar, anything change in your pocket's good, as long as it's not a nickel.
What about if you're getting food delivered to your home by Uber Eats?
$5.
$5. What about when the room in your hotel is made up and you're not there?
I'm not typical. I usually leave for the housekeepers. They have the hardest job in the entire hotel. They're kind of the account people of the hotel. I leave $10 a day. Most people will leave a dollar. Some people will leave five. I leave 10. I are on the side of generosity. But Ben, tell your brother, I am not typical. I believe that these service people work incredibly hard and they don't make a ton of money. Many of them are not even from the United States. And so if I can put a little more money into the pockets of those people, I'm doing a relatively good deed for a relatively small contribution on my part. This is my philosophy. My father used to be a terrible tipper. And when he would leave, after he would turn his back, because I loved my dad, I would actually pull out a $20 bill and I would tuck it into the charge card on top of whatever he gave. I'd even look at what Brilliant. He gave. I knew he didn't give them enough. So that gives you some window into my sort of sense of these people.
100%. And I hope you therefore always get the best table in the restaurant.
Well, thank you, Ben. I hope so, too. Since I eat at all the same restaurants all the time and everyone knows me, chances are you're right.
Yes, absolutely. So, Robert, I think that's a perfect place to end. I'm glad we've been able to offer some form of public service as part of this podcast as well. How can people get hold of you and how can people keep an eye on any updates regarding books, etc.?
Okay, thank you, Ben. I'm always available. I'm very easy to find. You can always Google Robert Solomon. You can find me at robert@solomonstrategic.com. You can Google in the art of client service. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm quite easily available. If anyone has a question or if someone wants to say to you, that guy Solomon was full of shit, they can do that too on any of those channels with me.
Brilliant. I don't think they will, but if they do, I will refer them to you rather than me.
Yeah, please do.
Robert, thank you very much for coming in.
My pleasure. Happy to be here, Ben.
So that was my conversation in Marketing Room 101 with Robert Solomon. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed it as much as I did, I'd love it if you could please send it as a link to just one other person who you think will enjoy it too. And remember, if you've done anything recently that you feel guilty about, perhaps you accidentally on purposely forgot to leave a tip at a restaurant this weekend, despite receiving perfectly adequate service from somebody on minimum wage, you can cancel out that bad karma in just 30 seconds by leaving a review of Marketing Room 101 wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, if you'd like to arrange a free chat about how I and the Principals team can help grow your brand, just find me on LinkedIn under my name, Ben Norman. And if you'd like to know more about Principals, just head to principalsagency.co.uk.